I just need to check the football scores there, Adam, because it's quite a big game happening right now.
Quite a big game.
Because we have limited recording time, I've actually stopped watching what I think people might later consider the, oh my God, it's now 5-4. Wow. What I think people later might consider one of the greatest Champions League games of all time. I had to stop watching it at 65 minutes when it had just gone 5-3. PSG by Munich. Now it's 5-4, apparently. So, but let's talk about a most violent year. What was yours?
Adam is the host now. The dynamic works better when Adam is the host. Adam prefers to the host, and Joe prefers to the participant. It's better overall when Adam is the host, and Joe is the participant. Let it never be spoken of again. The ghost. 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 The ghost.
Hello and welcome to the Movies You Forgot podcast with me, your host, Adam Richmondo, a.k.a. Adam Richmond, in case that confuses you. Joe seems to think that people might think I'm called Adam Richmondo. That would be a silly name, wouldn't it? This is the show where we talk about the movies or films that we'd forgot we'd even seen in the first place. And joining me as ever is old Mr. Football. Old Mr. I've got my eye on the old Champions League. Oh, I can't talk about movies because I've got to watch the old Champions League. And that's all everyone's going to be talking about this game for the next couple of years, aren't they? Mr. Joe Devine.
Sorry, that is not a fair description of me. I am here talking about movies and I haven't got any eyes on the game. I wish I did because it's 5-4 right now. And who knows what the score could be by the end of the game. But instead I'm here with Adam Richmondo, who thinks that people who've never heard his real name before will definitely be able to guess what it is.
On today's episode, we're doing the 2014 J.C. Chandor-directed flick, A Most Violent Year, starring Oscar Isaac and Jessica That Stain. It is 125 mins, maybe 15 mins too long, I'd say. 15 to 20 mins too long.
Yeah.
I guess it's a kind of a crimey, wire-esque, sprawling 1980s crime flick. So it wants a little bit of heft. But here's to the letterboxed blurb. The result is never in question, just the path you take to get there. A thriller set in New York City during the winter of 1981, statistically one of the most violent years in the city's history, you never get told that, by the way, and centered on the lives of an immigrant and his family trying to expand their business and capitalize on opportunities as the rampant violence, decay, and corruption of the day drag them in and threaten to destroy all they have built. That is one whole sentence. There's a couple of commas, but there's no full stops in there.
Mm.
It's also written by J.C. Chandor, writer-director. It was also done some other flicks.
Do you want me to read you the IMDb? Because it's quite good.
Yeah, more full stops would be great.
Well, there's only one, but that's because there's only one short sentence, and it reads as follows.
Yep.
In New York City, 1981, an ambitious immigrant fights to protect his business and family during the most dangerous year in the city's history.
Not enough detail in either of these plot summaries for us to get a handle on. The immigrant thing has popped out from both of them. Obviously, that's important, but I'd say the bigger picture seems to be more to do with this hustling business guy. He reminds me a bit of a young Donald Trump in a way.
Oh, Trumpy Pumpy.
Well, like there's that, I never saw it, but they did that flick of Trump set in the 80s with one of the Marvel guys called The Apprentice,
mm-hmm.
and had like a similar 80s aesthetic to this. But Oscar Isaac plays this very focused businessman he might be dodgy, might be not. He's married a very attractive mob-affiliated wife.
Seems like the daughter of a mob affiliated person or a mob boss potentially,
but maybe small time, but still like probably serious.
Mm-hmm.
And then Oscar Isaac
Abel. He's called Abel. Abel. No, it's Abel. I keep saying Abel.
Abel.
Not Abel. He's called Abel. Abel.
He's very able, though.
He's very able. And
Abel Abel.
He runs like an oil company. There's trucks. The trucks are getting robbed. He's got a big deal going down. And the trucks getting robbed is going to put the kind of scuppers on this big deal. And he's got to like hustle, and he wants to win and make money.
Yeah.
That's kind of what's going on. But it's
I would describe it as a film in which a man who has every possibility of and every reason to turn to crime tries not to for reasons. And that's the film. I mean, it's for that reason I found it very, very interesting. I thought that core theme was fascinating as a sort of almost it was almost a man attempting to live some kind of pious existence, not necessarily for devout reasons, but for still for selfishly motivated reasons. But in the middle of an environment in which everything pushed him in a different direction. So that's not just his competitors who in many cases seem to be criminals and engaging in criminal activity to get their competitive advantage. Also the police and the DEA, or it's the district attorney, is like one of the other, you know, sort of antagonists, sort of not in the film. It appears as though because of perhaps the history of this company, Oscar Isaacs has bought it off Jessica Chastain's father, who, you know, we infer from dialogue in the film was a criminal in one way or another. And it seems very likely that whether or not there's any crime happening at the time, there's a sort of slightly don't ask, don't tell attitude towards it from Oscar Isaac and his wife Jessica Chastain, who appears to be the accountant of the company. But also it seems as though they are a company that is at least attempting to go almost entirely straight, and every institutional system and competitive drive in Oscar Isaac's environment is sort of forcing him and pushing him back in the direction of crime. And that's the theme for the whole film. I mean, it's sort of fascinating, really. And it's like it's set in New York in the 80s. It's a kind of corporate version of a coming of age story for a young man from a city center in any European country who's come from poverty and being driven towards being a drug dealer or something. It's like the same kind of pathway where you can see all of these events conspire, and you look at the fabric of society and you realize, oh, that's why this is happening, you know, or at least that's why this was happening in 1981 in New York. I thought it was fantastic.
That's interesting, because I think Oscar Isaac's self-image can't allow him to have success any other way. Like if there's anything criminal, it would kind of ruin it. He wants to have got it all himself. And so he's a man in denial throughout the whole movie. Yeah, I quite liked it. Although, have you seen this film before, Joe? You're talking about it like you've seen it before.
I texted you to say, whoopsie poopsie, I clearly have not seen this before. I thought I had. I think what's happened is that I was thinking of, what's it called?
We Own the Night.
Yeah, with Joaquin Phoenix, but also with Oscar Isaac and Jessica Chastain, I think.
No, Gwyneth Paltrow's in We Own the Night, isn't she?
No, that's the other Joaquin Phoenix film that she's in. That's that weird rom-com. I watched that with my wife a year ago. That was an incredibly slow film.
Oh yeah, no, it's Eva Mendes. No, but Mark Wahlberg's in We Own the Night.
Is Oscar Isaac not in it?
No, Oscar Isaac isn't in it.
So neither Oscar Isaac nor Jessica Chastain are in We Own the Night, but for some reason I thought that was this film.
I mean, I can see why you thought, you know, it doesn't say 80s, but it looks plum 80s. Two brothers on opposite sides of the law. Beyond their differences lies loyalty. A New York nightclub manager tries to save his brother and father from Russian mafia hitmen.
Yeah, I don't think I thought it was this film because the films themselves are similar. But for some reason, the conceit of the poster and the title, the combination of these two things, they crossed over in my mind. So no, it's a record third time that we've watched a film that I haven't actually seen before. I've forgotten that I didn't even forget it in the first instance. This is a sort of deeper cut in many ways, isn't it? But I'm glad that that happened, because I don't think I ever would have watched this, either because I thought I'd already seen it, or because it just didn't really look like it appealed to me that much. And actually, I think it's sort of a rare gem. I don't think it's a fantastic film, and I didn't particularly love the ending of the film either. I thought there was, I don't want to get too much in the weeds, but there's a subplot relating to an employee that works for Oscar Isaac that I think they've tried to introduce in order to maintain some more personal stakes and a little bit more jeopardy come the end of the film. And I just don't think it's necessary, nor did I think the symbolism that came along with that was particularly necessary either. However, I thought the whole, you know, conceit of the main plot was fascinating. I can't think of another film that I've seen quite like that. And I really liked how restrained it was. And, you know, the term quiet fury is very overused, but that was present in this film, I think. I loved it as a kind of, there's something sick about it. You know, there's something that has a little bit of that kind of, usually associated with North America and men, that kind of like toxic, just keep going attitude, regardless of what happens, don't ever stop, don't ever give up attitude. There's something, maybe that's just the kind of the toxic side of the American dream, but there's something very compelling about it, I thought. Did you like it?
I did. Like, it made me think, oh, it's like it's what people call a grown-up movie. This is a grown-up movie, and they don't, you know, you don't really get these anymore. They get turned into TV series. There's not really this guy. I don't want to get ahead of myself to the budget, but I imagine it's a medium budget, between $20 and $40 million. It's got a Coke budget. It's got an '80s budget, but it's not going to make loads of boffo box office. So this kind of more grown up drama flick just doesn't get made anymore, which I liked. I enjoyed rewatching it, but I remembered why I've forgotten it, and I've already forgotten pretty much everything about it, and I watched it 2 days ago.
Yeah, same.
It's because there's no big juicy moments. There's no grandstanding, like, scenes. Oscar Isaac doesn't get like a big juicy Al Pacino speech. There's a couple of arguments, a couple of great arguments he has with Jessica Chastain, who isn't really in the flick that much, even though she's on the poster.
He's very restrained in those arguments as well. So whilst I think it's actually fantastic acting, and I think it's appropriate for the story, it does mean that there's a lack of Hollywood moments in the film, which maybe make it memorable.
Yeah, and then again, then maybe it's restrained and it's very good. There's lots of nice, surprising moments. There's a bit, for example, where they're getting hassled by we don't know who baddies, and he chases a guy one night outside their house. The next morning, the little girl is playing with a gun, and Jessica Chastain's response to that is very odd and very funny. And so it's got lots of detail to it. It's really well judged. It's really well put together. But I mean, yeah, there's a reason why people don't talk about it anymore.
Well, can I play a little game with you at this point?
Yes, please. Is it the J.C. Chandor game?
It's not the J.C. Chandor game.
Oh.
It's the Oscar Isaac game. And the reason I'm raising that is we just talked about the idea that I think he actually does a very good acting job in this film, but he is quite restrained. It doesn't have that sort of that Hollywood appeal necessarily. And Oscar Isaac is someone, I don't know about you, but he strikes me as a terrific actor, you know, and if not an A class, what do they call them? A class star? A what? A-lister. Yeah,
he's not an A-lister.
No, I'm saying if not an A-lister, then a high B-lister, right? Like, yeah. he's a quality actor. If he was in a butcher's shop, he'd be a near prime slice of meat. You'd be paying premium figure for this guy. However, when I started to think about why I think that, short of the one or two performances that I really like in one or two films, I couldn't really work it out. I went to go and look at his IMDb, and that's when I devised this game, Adam. This game is called the Oscar Isaac's IMDb rating game. And I want you to tell me what the top five Oscar Isaac's films are by their rating on IMDb. I want you to guess.
Okay, well, we played the Ralph Fiennes version of this, higher or lower. So you get the sense that these figures are abroad, you know, they speak to the mainstream. So,
sure.
I mean, June's got to be there, right?
Well, I'd love you to guess films and then tell me where you think they are in the order. Also, I'd love you to have a little pop at the rating as well.
Do I get to look at his letterboxed?
No.
Do I have to get these from my brain?
No, you have to remember the films. Yeah, you have to remember the films.
Ooh, I mean, can I even name five Oscar Isaac movies? Oh, okay, yeah, there we go. Inside.
Therein maybe part of the fun, though, right? Because, again, this kind of gets to the heart of why I wanted to play this game, because I think the perception I have of him is maybe highly weighted by a very small handful of films. And then when you do engage with his filmography overall, it seems a little lacking, potentially.
Well, I'm going to name the three I know.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can give me some clues.
Are these just like the three Oscar Isaac films you can remember?
These are four I can remember. I can't think of any.
Name them. Yeah.
Right, so we've got June.
Part one, yeah.
June part one, of course. Uh-huh. I would have said June part two. Yeah. June part one, Ex Machina, A Most Violent Year, which we've just watched, and Inside Llewyn Davis.
Yeah, okay. So I can tell you three of those are on the list.
Oh, and we've done one of this parish. It's Two Faces of January.
Oh, yeah.
Which won't be on this list.
No, because I expect that doesn't have a high rating. Let me check.
That'll have a 6.9.
Yeah, that's a 6.2. That doesn't make this list.
6.2. Is that... That's mad for that flick. That's outrageous.
So later on, we have a separate game, by the way, which later on I'm going to explain to you how I now know the IMDb rating system works. And it will explain why that's a 6.2. You've named three of them on the list, and I'll just give you a clue and say the film we're talking about today isn't one of them.
Yeah, great.
You're missing two still.
Can I have little clue, like really soft clues for the other two? Like, are they older flicks or?
One of them's a little older, maybe around the 15-year mark, but the other one's a little more recent. Although the reception of it, I think, is much more divisive.
Oh, okay. Force Awakens.
Yeah, Force Awakens is on the list. Yeah. And then you're missing a film in which he stars alongside another actor that he's currently starring in a film with. And then the one that you're missing is a film in which he is today doing promo for a TV series in which he's starring alongside the same actor that he starred alongside in that film.
He's in a TV series with Carey Mulligan. That's Inside Llewyn Davis. I said that.
A different film in which he's in with Carey Mulligan.
He's double Carey Mulligan. Oh, Drive.
He's Mulligan, my friend. He has Mulligan. Yeah, Drive. That's it. So I guess now the game is to put these films in order of their rating on IMDb.
In at five, Force Awakens. No. In at five, Inside Llewyn Davis with, I'm going to say, 7.7. And then Force Awakens, 7.9. Ex Machina, 8. 2, Drive, 8.1. And June, 8.2.
Very good. Very, very good. In fact, you can essentially have that as a correct order, although two of them are drawing. So Ex Machina and Star Wars, Force Awakens are drawing. All the ratings are lower than what you suggested. So they start at 7.4 at the bottom. They end
7.4 for Inside Llewyn Davis is...
Yeah, well, and 8 is June part 1. And the reason so this is it, that it was a little ham-fisted to get to my point, and I forced you to play a game in order to do that.
But I did well with my game, right?
You did very well. You did exceptionally well. You won the game.
Thanks.
The reason I wanted to do that is to make the kind of ham-fisted point that Oscar Isaac's highest rated film is an 8.0 on IMDb. in Dune Part One, which, you know, he's good in, but he's also like a very side supporting character, I would say. And then beyond that, he's in three very good films. One of which, so in Drive, he's like super side part again. Like he's, you know, you almost forgot he was in that film, right? He's in like two or three scenes. I think he's terrific in Ex Machina. And I think he's fantastic in Inside Llewyn Davis. He's also, again, a massive side part in Star Wars. My point is, I feel as though the space he occupies inside my brain is outsized relative to his actual filmography-related achievements. That's my ham-fisted point. I think I thought he was bigger than this and did more stuff that was good, and he hasn't and isn't.
He is a character actor, and he's one of the last character actors that we have, and he sits at that in that uneasy space when the character actor was going out of style, and he's managed to still be in flicks, but because he was in Star Wars and Dune,
yeah,
he has far more like visibility. Sorry to use such a wank word,
right?
But he's basically an older version of Adam Driver, but probably hasn't been in.
But Adam Driver's in like far better films, isn't he?
Well, we'd looked at Adam Driver, and Adam Driver has been in fuckloads of films. He's seemingly got doesn't care what he stars in.
That's true. Whereas it's very hit and miss.
Oscar Isaac, although he was in one of the worst X-Men movies, Apocalypse. I think he chooses a little wiser. He's a little older.
But where's the, like, my point here, right, is that, like, I think he's a terrific actor. I think this film, A Most Violent Year, exhibits his acting ability. I think it's terrific. Okay, even if he is a character actor, then where's his performance in a PTA film? Why isn't he in a Coen Brothers film? Why isn't he in, Martin Scorsese film?
He stars in a Coen Brothers film, mate. He's in...
Which Coen Brothers film is he in?
Inside Llewyn Davis.
Oh, I forget that's Coen Brothers. Yeah, no, I don't want to redo that. I'm not like you. I don't need to edit out the mistakes that I make in the podcast to make myself sound better.
That is his peak moment. He was the star of the Coen Brothers movie, and then...
That was in 2013. That was 13 years ago.
And that sealed his place in the cineast's heart. And then I think generally, because he's a character actor, Coen Brothers aren't...
Is he just done now?
Well, he's not done, but the Coen Brothers aren't spunking out movies. P.T. Anderson hasn't hired him. Scorsese obviously hasn't had call to use him either.
Incidentally, I forgot to say in my game, I really should have said this, that I excluded animated films because he is in a couple of the Spider-Man, Spider-Verse movies, which have very, very high ratings. They are 8.5.
They don't count for anything.
They don't count? You don't think they count?
No, not at all. But thank you for leaving them out because... absolute nonsense.
Yeah. Also, technically, Frankenstein has a 7.4, so that could have been 5.
Oh, God, that's what I saw him in last. He was appalling in that. You see, that's what I think is interesting to flip off. It's flip off the back of your game is who
you want to flip
are
off?
The directors he hasn't worked with? Scorsese, P.T. Anderson, Michael Mann.
Spielberg?
Has he Spielberged?
Has he Spielberg? I don't think so. Has he?
Let's find out. I don't think he has.
I can't see a Spielberg.
I can't see a Spielberg. No.
He has. He was in Robin Hood, apparently. Our favourite Robin Hood.
Yeah.
With Russell Crowe, which is a Ridley Scott. So he's been in a Ridley Scott film, although I do not remember him in that film.
He plays the kind of the baddie, like the secondary baddie. He's very good.
He plays the secondary baddie. You're right.
He's really good in a flick called, another Chandor flick, Triple Frontier with Ben Affleck.
Oh, straight to Chandor.
Yeah, straight to Netflix.
Do you know what I just started watching yesterday? I just started watching. I only watched one episode of it. It's, I don't know what it's called, Night of the Seven Realms, I think it's called, that new Game of Thrones spin-off. And
Seven, the thingy of the thingy thingies, yeah.
The thingy of the thingy thingies. And I'm not talking about TV, don't worry. I just want to tell you, the Irish guy in it, who's the main guy.
The tall guy, the big guy.
Yeah, good Lord, he's fucking incredible, man.
Is he?
I watched it for, I would say, 90 seconds at the beginning. And I thought, oh my God, this guy's amazing. He's amazing. He's going places, that guy. I can tell you.
Yeah, he's going places to be in the star of one of the Game of Thrones spin-offs. How did you pick that?
No, but I still think that films are bigger.
Wow, Joe. Your talent scout, Joe Devine, watches one of the biggest shows on telly and is like, this guy is starring in the show. He's going places.
He's going to Hollywood. That's what I'm saying. He's going to Hollywood where the movies, where the lights are shining brightly and where the stars sing and eat rice. And what do they do in Hollywood when they say that? I'm going to Hollywood where the streets all sing your name or something. What is it that they do there in Hollywood?
What's the tune for the song?
I'm going to Hollywood where the streets all sing my name.
Hollywood. Na 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 Hollywood.
Yeah.
And then where the lights are bright and the streets are shiny, stars so bright.
Yeah, I think that's it. I'm going to Hollywood where the pavement is called a sidewalk.
Where you can go to the Viper Room. Eight ball with a river phoenix. You know.
I don't say eight ball with a river phoenix because he's dead.
I am a golden god!
Do you think this Kingdoms guy is going places quicker than that Saipan guy, Ian Hardwick?
Yeah, I think so. I think so.
But just taste-wise or because of Kingdom, do you think he's better than that? And also, is this show worth watching?
Well, I only watched one episode, so I couldn't tell you. But from the one episode, I think... All right, if you want me to, which you clearly do, I'm being given permission. I'm going to give my very brief review of the first episode of that show, which by the time people are listening to this, if they've any interest in watching, they will have watched already. And if they haven't watched it already, they won't ever watch it. So this is why it's a relevant time for me to do this.
But so also, it's been on TV for about 6 months.
Yeah, so that's what I'm saying.
That's why I've given you permission. Like it's not.
Oh, thanks.
This is not like okay. It's just come out.
No, it's not fresh off the old. It's because you see, I got HBO Max the other day.
Oh, me too.
I had to. Did you? I got it so I could watch Singing in the Rain because it was on there. And I thought, well, I'm going to have to get it at some point anyway, so I'll just get it now. And then I had a good old time flicking through. There's quite a lot of nice stuff on there. This isn't an advert for HBO Max. But,
brought to you by HBO. Oh, no, you're not allowed to make jokes about that. Yeah, and I'm watching it for The Pit.
What's The Pit?
It's the ER. It's basically ER Mark II.
Oh, I can't watch hospital dramas. Yeah,
fucking love it. Oh, hospital dramas. My wife.
No.
She's in, you get people degloved. A leg's been degloved.
A leg has been degloved. Yeah. Isn't that defooted? Good
well,
Lord.
Yeah, it's lovely stuff.
I don't want that. Anyway, let me tell you about, what's it called? A Kingdom of Seven Knights. I don't know what it's called. I watched it and I thought, well now, hello. Hello, Poppet. You know, in Pirates of the Caribbean, where they...
Hello.
Yeah, they look through that closet and they go, hello, Poppet. And they open the door and Keira Knightley's there. That's a bit like what it was like yesterday when I was watching this thing. I thought, what really impressed me so far, anyway, was that the tone doesn't appear to be anything resembling Game of Thrones. It's completely different. It's quite lighthearted, seemingly, or at least it's very funny if it's not lighthearted. The editing style, very different from core Game of Thrones and from the other spin-off, of which I only watched the first series, I think. I thought it was fantastic. And it really seemed like what they'd done was hire really, really good showrunner and or directors or whoever and say, just make this the best thing you can without having to kind of
tie the mast completely to the center of Westeros, or whatever. And they've gone and made a show, which I suppose the comparison could be, you know, making The Mandalorian, for example, which has its Star Wars in it, right? It's got Star Wars DNA, but tonally it's just so different to the core storyline of the films that it's a real treat to watch something like that, set in the universe that you know and like, but also that's a bit different and, you know, could almost be a different genre of film. I've only watched one episode, but I finished it and I turned to my wife and I said, that was excellent, excellent. And I don't often do that unless Gordon Ramsay's been on.
Yeah, no, you had me until you said that thing about The Mandalorian, which I'd say is for babies who haven't ever watched anything any good. But
right.
Other than that, I'll watch Kingdom of the Thingy Thingies, sure.
It's a riddle. Speak, friend. And enter. What's the Elvish word for friend?
Melon. The final thing I have, and I wrote this down in my film diary, Adam. Here's what I wrote. I watched The Neverending Story today as well. I wrote...
Tell me about that after. Why?
It appeared in my film diary. I wrote, this film is like a subtler Uncut Gems. Because Uncut Gems, the Safdie Brothers movie, of course, with Adam Sandler, who plays that jewellery store owner who's in a bit of a pickle. That film is famous for its intensity and the speed at which everything happens and the way that the film ratchets up the tension and the stakes as you move forward with the character. And it is the flashy, aggressive, and Hollywood version of A Most Violent Year. It's like the Safdie brothers watched that film and then went, oh, let's do that, but with Adam Sandler, and where it's like crazier and where everyone's shouting and where it moves 100 miles an hour instead of 20 in a school zone, you know? So I have a lot of respect for this film because I think it's doing something. You described it as a grown-up film already. That's exactly what it is. It's doing something really smart, and it's sticking kind of doggedly to the core principles of what makes the film smart without sacrificing and without compromising in order to make it more memorable. It's forgetting itself in order to be a good film, and I'm all on board with that. I just won't remember that I am tomorrow.
Yeah, you're spot on, Joe. Why do people rate the intense, crazy, Safdie, visceral version of this story? I mean, I guess, is it just about intensity and like, I can't fucking believe that happened and then that happened and then that happened? Is that generally, it's not just that people prefer it. I think most people would say Uncut Gems is a better film than this, even like critically, which I don't think it is.
I mean, it might be. I'm not sure. It could be. I think it's partly the experience, right? I mean, we said this when we talked about Marty Supreme about 4 months ago. And we said at the time, wow, what a rollercoaster ride that was. Really exciting film. Come out of the cinema, walking on air. In 4 months, we're going to think it's like a whole star lower than we think it is today. And that's 100% what I think now. I look back on Marty Supreme like I look back on a fun evening of drug taking, which at the time was incredibly fun. And now, you know, not only does it fade into the background with all the other nights of fun drug taking, but also I feel kind of guilty and sick about it as well. And that's sort of how I feel about Uncut Gems. I don't think I will feel that about A Most Violent Year, but I do think that's because I will forget A Most Violent Year. And perhaps the experience and the intensity of those Safdie brothers versions of this film is the reason that they stay in the mind a little longer because of the experience of watching them at the time. Because can you imagine what Marty Supreme would be like if it wasn't fast paced? It'd be rubbish.
I don't know if it would actually, because there's a lot. It's almost like he's not Josh Safdie. He's not undone himself by making it that intense. But it's not, yeah, I'm like reflecting on it and thinking like, did he bottle it? Because there's like lovely moments. He's got all this kind of detail. And then he's like, oh no, we've got to like hammer through this and we've got to have lots of crazy turns. As soon as the bath falls through the ceiling.
Yeah, that's the worst bit.
I was like, oh, is that the movie? And I remember really, I came out really pumped about the movie, and like I tried to sell you on it, actually, it being better than One Battle After Another. But I think about that, and now it's just popped into my mind, like, oh yeah, the bit where the bath falls through the thing, and then there's a dog, and then that's the movie. And like, then you can't really trust it as if it's just someone suddenly going to just scream in your ear. And then the guy shits himself, and then this happens, and then this happens, and then, oh, you'll never believe. And like, it's just, you're with someone who's got no control over the story they're telling. They just want to keep your attention, whatever happens. And that takes a day. Like, it's really, really well done. But I've got zero respect for it now, on reflection.
And I'm not just talking about my marriage.
Yeah. No, no.
No, no, I'm not.
No, no.
Hey, do you want to play another game?
Yeah, yeah, sure, sure. Let's play another game.
All right, this game is also an IMDb-related game. But I'm more excited about this one, Adam. Okay, here's what it's called. It's called Which Director is Higher Voted? IMDb Game. Okay, but you've got to say it like that. Say it back to me.
Which director is higher voted IMDb game?
Yes, exactly. That's actually perfect. Now, here's how the game works, okay? I have got, based on the top sort of 100, 150-ish movies in IMDb's top 250, I've got the first instance of each director, so their first appearance in it. So let's say, for example, in at number two is Francis Ford Coppola, because The Godfather is obviously, it's the second film in the list. The fourth film in the list is The Godfather 2. So in at number four is a different director, right? Because Francis Ford Coppola only counts for his first appearance. Does that make sense to you?
Okay.
So you might have, you know, Francis Ford Coppola could have been in the list seven times, but he only appears once because he is the second highest director in the list.
Okay.
And the game is as follows. I'm going to give you a handful of directors, and you have to tell me which one of them appears higher in the list or lower. Okay,
it's higher, better.
Higher is better. Yeah,
higher is closer to one.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Oh, I see what you're doing. You're being a higher or lower pedant. No, that's fair enough. Higher.
I just wanted to check.
Yes, higher in the list is closer to one, which is lower. So higher is lower, and that's better.
Okay, so I want to be higher. Yeah, you want to go higher or lower?
You
want to
be higher. Yeah. I thought also you might want to know what the rating system on IMDb is, how it works.
We teased it.
We've had this conversation over the last couple of episodes. So this is Colin's helped me work this out. He said, Colin says this: the top 250 is based on, the first thing is based on his user ratings, so that star rating from 1 to 10 that you see on IMDb. The second is weighted, not raw averages, which basically just means that if a film only had 500 reviews and they were all 10, it wouldn't go straight to the top of the IMDb 250. You have to have like minimum thresholds in order to account for that. So, and the third is it's only from regular voters. So there are accounts that IMDb trusts more. And apparently what goes into that is also the voting style. So if there's people that have IMDb accounts and they just vote tens or ones on everything, their votes aren't considered when it comes to a film overall. I'd love to know if the trusted regular voters know that they're trusted regular voters. Quite fun. Anyway, so that means that you will notice patterns in the list. For example, recency bias does exist, but it's limited. Certain genres can dominate, so crime and drama, I think we've probably noticed from looking at the list before. And broadly liked films will outperform divisive ones often as well. The key takeaway is that the IMDb top 50 or top 250, it's not the best films ever. That's not the list. The list is films with the strongest consensus approval at scale, which is just a much nicer way of defining what we've tried to define before. But films with the strongest consensus approval at scale. Okay?
Canon. Cultural canon.
Essentially cultural canon. Yeah, that's essentially what the formula is trying to synthesize. And also, I have put in any directors that appear that have co-directed a film will appear together if it's their first instance. So, like the Coen brothers, for example, or the Wachowskis. In fact, that's a really good starting point. Let's start with the Wachowskis and the Coen brothers. Who do you think appears higher in the list? And if you had to guess between one end, our number goes to seven, the 70 directors on our list. If you had to guess between 1 and 70 where you think those are, then give us some idea.
Well, the Wachowskis are going to be very high up with The Matrix, I would suggest. The Coens would be high up with No Country for Old Men, but I would imagine that The Matrix is going to appear higher, and I think that's going to be in the top 10, the Wachowskis are. And then Coens either, like, probably in the early teens.
Well, you're right on one count. The Wachowskis are pretty high up. They are 11th with The Matrix, so that's nice, isn't it? However, the Coen brothers, they're nowhere near the top. The highest rated Coen brothers movie is Fargo, and they are 68th on the list. They barely get in to the top 70 directors. So again, a re-emphasis that this is not the best films of all time. This is just the best films at the best consensus at scale.
But still, I was right with in terms of higher and lower. So, you know, I was right twice and wrong once.
You were right mostly. How about Martin Scorsese versus Quentin Tarantino?
What a great conundrum, because this is what people, thickos, love Tarantino.
Basically, am I bluffing you or am I double bluffing you? That's the game here.
That's the right. The Departed has got huge fandom out there. But is he double bluffing me?
The Departed is not Scorsese's film on this list. I mean, it's probably on the, it'd probably be in the top 250, but it's not the highest Scorsese.
Maybe it's Wolf of Wall Street. I feel like everyone gets behind, what is it? Which one of it is Tarantino's everyone loves? Everyone gets behind Django Unchained, unequivocally. This is really great. Well, is he double bluffing me? I'm going to you've lured me with your bluff. I'll say Tarantino is above Scorsese. Doesn't make sense that Scorsese wouldn't be in the top 10. If the Wachowskis are only 11, yeah, fuck it. Okay, Scorsese's in the top 10 and Tarantino is like around the 20s.
Unfortunately, you should have stuck with your first answer. Scorsese is not in the top 10. He's 12th with Goodfellas. That's his most. That's his highest rated film. But Quentin Tarantino is 7th with Pulp Fiction.
Right. Okay. I'm overthinking myself now.
Maybe a little, because I thought it was interesting there that your mind went straight to films that you thought that the consensus rated. But actually, in both cases, it was just their best, most canon, most popular film, right?
Yeah, yeah. So it's not that much. It's not that much recency bias.
Not that much. You can have some, which is why, for example, Project Hail Mary appears in the top 100 IMDb at this moment. It may fall out over time, right?
I'd like to think so.
Fuck off. Right. Let's try this instead. Let's try Damien Chazelle versus Akira Kurosawa, famous Japanese director
of Seven Samurai fame.
Of Seven Samurai, yeah. Or Seven Samurai, depending on how you want to say it.
Samurai. I reckon Chazelle's got Akira Kurosawa beat. La La Land, it will be... Maybe he'll be in the top 20 and Kurosawa, maybe 60.
Well, sadly, you're wrong again, sir. Damien Chazelle, just outside the top 20, 21. It was Whiplash, by the way. That's the film of choice still for Damien Chazelle. Although, you know, La La Land is absolutely fucking phenomenal, so... That should be in here as well. Seven Samurai for Akira Kurosawa, number 15. So just beating out there. But it's good to know this game is mostly me versus you as opposed to you versus the list. This is mostly me picking things that I think will either you'll think one way or think the other. It's kind of 50-50. So I've devised a different game within the game, okay? I'm going to give you people to rank instead of being a one or the other. So the people that I want you to rank for me, please... are Sergio Leone, David Fincher, Steven Spielberg, Bong Joon-ho.
Well, Steven Spielberg is the highest.
With what film?
Probably E.T.
Okay.
Then Sergio Leone, Good, the Bad and the Ugly. Then Fincher for Seven. And then Bong Joon-ho for Parasite. And as soon as I came to Parasite, I was like, actually, Parasite would be if I just... Recency bias, plop that right in the top 10.
Do you want to change your list?
Yes, I want to change my list. So we'll go we'll go Steven Spielberg for E.T., Bong Joon-ho for Parasite. Is Bong Joon-ho is going to be even higher? It doesn't matter. Let me finish it. This will be the list. Fincher. No, it's not.
You were right the first time. Oh. You were right the first time round. You got some of the films wrong, but you were right the first time round. I love that I can get you to move Bong Joon-ho up the list just by laughing. No, you had the order correct. Steven Spielberg's film, though, was Schindler's List, and David Fincher's film was Fight Club.
Oh, nice.
There you go.
Good old Fight Club. Been chatting about Fight Club a lot on the Discord. A lot of other podcast fans, people sick of the fact that, you know, Fight Club has been taken away from us by idiots and film bros. And, you know, we're taking it back. The tide's turning. We're having that flick back.
We're starting a club.
Yeah.
And the first rule is that you always talk about how good Fight Club is. And the second rule is that you never shut up about how Fight Club's good and it's been ruined by other people despite it never really going anywhere, you know.
Heard this one before. There's nothing original in my words. If it sounds familiar, it's 'cause I'm recycling a prior opinion. Why can't you find something new to say? Why can't you find something new to say?
You would have thought that Grand Budapest Hotel would have had that broad appeal, but I don't think it does really. I still think it's got all... Christ alive. Hello?
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 Hi, I'm just calling to see if I can get an appointment with a doctor today. I know I'm calling a bit late, but...
Sure, can we just run through some of your symptoms just so I can see if I'll get the doctor to call back or...
I really don't like having to tell. Is it okay to call you a receptionist?
I am a receptionist. That's fine.
Okay. I really don't like having to tell receptionists what my symptoms are. Is it enough for me to say that I really need to be seen today?
It's not enough to say that because of the way the National Health Service has gone. We need to, there's queues and, you know, some people are more pressing than others. I need to know.
Right. Okay.
If you can't tell me, I don't know what I can do.
I'll tell you. I just. Can anyone else hear me?
No, it's just us on the phone.
Okay. Well, it's about going to the toilet.
Okay. Yeah. What is it? Is there blood in your stool? Is it hard to come out? Is it runny? Is it smell funny?
It's hard to come out.
The poo's quite hard to come out. And how long has this happened for?
It's been happening for 4 days.
4 days?
Yeah, I'm backed up.
And you haven't passed a stool for 4 days?
No, I keep going to the toilet. And every time I get to the point of it passing, it gets stuck. And I've had to just push it back in.
Well, you're not supposed to push it back in.
Well, I know that. That's why I'm calling the doctors. I'm not calling the doctors to get judged by the fucking receptionist. I'm calling to get an appointment because I cannot go to the toilet.
Well, it sounds like... Yeah, you've forgotten how to go to the toilet. I don't mean to be rude, but...
I haven't forgotten.
You let it just let it come out.
I can't let it come out because it won't... It doesn't fit. It won't go past. It's so massive.
Is it like a Balrog?
It's like a Balrog. It's like a Grand Budapest Hotel. I can't pass it.
It's like a what?
My wife is calling it the Grand Budapest Hotel.
That seems in very bad taste.
Well, you called it a Balrog.
Yeah, but I know a Lord of the Rings fan, you know, when I hear one. I can hear it in the timbre of your voice.
Yeah, okay, you've got me there. It is good, isn't it? Yeah. And actually, it's more accurate because, it's like a hotel in the sense that it's bulky, obviously, and wouldn't pass through an anus easily. But it is actually more like a Balrog in the sense that it feels like it's on fire.
You know, if your wife was a Quentin Tarantino fan, she'd probably call it an Inglorious Bastard.
Oh, that's good, yeah.
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 What other films do you think she likes?
Oh, right. Well, I think she likes that one, Do the Right Thing, but I think she would call it Poo the Right Thing. And I've been trying to say to her, I wish I could, love, but...
Yeah.
I'm no. What's the name of the director of Do the Right Thing?
Spike Lee.
I'm no. Yeah, it's too spiky. I've been saying to her, it's too spiky. I can't do that. I can't put the right thing. It's too spiky.
Yeah, you're Malcolm extremely backed up.
Yeah,
Malcolm X extremely backed up.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I got it. Yeah.
Yeah. Never mind, she's got to have it. You've got to have it in the toilet.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. 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 You're bamboo. Hang on a sec. You're bamboozled.
Yeah. Right.
Right?
Yeah, yeah. That's it.
Yeah?
Yeah. It's also, it feels like it's like poos, trains, and automobiles. You know, that there's three different sizes of things trying to come out of my tunnel.
Hang on a sec. Wait, it's like poos, trains, and automobiles.
Yeah, yeah, that's what it's like. Yeah. Have you got a problem with that? I thought you were taking notes for the doctor.
I mean, I'm not going to... You want me to take a note of poos, trains, and automobiles? I was writing down all my ideas.
Will it help me get an appointment quicker?
I mean, you've got to do better than that.
Okay, fine. It feels like I am Charlie... what's his name? It feels like I'm Willem Dafoe running through the forests of Vietnam in the film Plopoon. Yeah?
Okay, now you're...
Plopoon.
Yeah. Yeah? Yeah. Plopoon.
Yeah.
Oliver Stone in your pants.
Oh, fucking hell. I love a stone, if it was one. This is more like The Rock featuring in the film The Rock. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Alexander the Great, shit in your pants.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Alexander the Great, big shit. Yeah. That's the main problem I've got. I've got a bit of a Troy situation back there, you know. Do you want to play the box office game?
Yeah, yeah, sure. Let's do it. Tricky business. The old tricky business is coming into town.
The tricky business game. Now, remember the box office game for it's, what is it? What's this movie called?
A Most Violent Year.
Released, of course, in January 2015. What do you think the budget was for this movie? Brackets estimated.
Bujo.
I mean, you already said 20 to 40 earlier.
I did, didn't I?
Yeah. Perhaps that didn't survive the cut, but if it did, they heard it. If not, they know now.
This is his, I think it's his third flick, J.C. Chandor. He directs Margin Call, which is about sort of almost like a play, bankers in a room, we're kind of watching the crash, the 2008 crash sort of happen and unfurl. Kevin Spacey, Jeremy Irons, Paul Bettany, good flick. He follows that up with All Is Lost with Robert Redford on a boat. So he's got some credola, but like, are they giving him that much for this kind of flick? There's no fireworks.
For this movie? I don't know.
There's no trailer. Maybe 35 mil?
20 mil. He gets $20 million estimated for this movie.
He does pretty good for 20 mil.
Not bad.
Sense of Space and Time for 1981.
What about opening weekend US and Canada? January 4, 2015.
I mean, I don't think it's getting much. I think maybe 300 grand?
172 grand.
Oof. I'm overcooking I'm overcooking the IMDb figures and I'm overcooking these numbers.
Bear that in mind when you get to gross worldwide then. Why don't you try to work out where your overcook is?
Bear that in mind tonight. Bear that in mind tonight.
When you get to gross worldwide, yeah.
Boo, 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 boo. 20 mils. I hope it's not a flop, because he does continue to make flicks after this.
Does he indeed?
He does. The only reason he stopped, like the last thing he did was Kraven the Hunter.
Mm.
The horrible stink fest with Aaron Taylor Johnson, a kind of a Spidey adjacent superhero flick.
Quite a lot of gaps in his filmography though. It's some large gaps of years. I think the film he made before Kraven the Hunter was 5 years earlier.
Yeah, because he's trying to make grown-up film. Aside from that, that's the exception, not the rule. He's trying to make grown-up flicks. He writes his screenplays. He's got to hustle up the money.
Yeah.
He made a film called The Dinner with Steve Coogan, which I would recommend watching. It's two couples having dinner. Something's amiss. Tension. Again, quite play-like.
And I'm not just talking about mine and your wife.
No. No, not about the time you came over.
I wasn't even talking, you were talking.
Does it wash its face? I don't think it does. Like, maybe it makes... Does it make 18 mil? It
makes $12 million.
Oh, mate, yeah. JC Chan don't.
JC Chan don't. It's a flop-a-rooney, I think. I mean, not just I think it is. It is a flop.
No, only in the cinemas. Okay, it got released, and then when it comes out on DVD, people watch it and rent it because it's really well regarded. It's the kind of flick people go, "Ooh, I heard about that." It got really well reviewed, and I remember seeing the poster. Yes, look at the DVD sales.
No one's renting it in 2014. I'll look at the DVD sales, but the DVD sales for Donnie Darko, which we described as a classic DVD movie, were like $3 million or something. I'll have a look. DVD sales.
Because sometimes
a most violent year. Let me just have a quick
and
look.
And streaming numbers. But like I think 20, like sometimes
yeah. Here we go. Oh, 2014 crime drama and most violent year generated an estimated $868,000 in standard DVD sales and $588,000 in Blu-ray sales in North America, bringing its total estimated domestic home video revenue to $1.5 million basically.
That's right, domestic. That's pretty.
Maybe it could have been more elsewhere, but like, it's not going to make up the extra.
No. Who said that? And also, who would say that? Well, stupid.
I don't think anyone would say that. I've never heard anyone say that.
Well, Jack, you are the perfect guest because you rehomed your little doggy, didn't you?
I did. Our first dog we got from Bussy Dogs Home, Sadie, the Staffordshire Bull Terrier. We had many happy years together.
Oh, Sadie's no longer.
See, she was pretty old when we got her. She arrived because her owner had done something terrible legally. But he did love his dog, so she was actually quite a happy dog. So she hadn't been mistreated. So we, it was, you know, swings and roundabouts with the rehoming.
People are complicated, aren't they?
Oh, they
just
dogs.
Goes to show, and dogs.
Okay, should we do the bit of the show where one of us reads out a list of movies they forgot, with a view to catching out the other one on a list of movies they forgot?
Yes. It's my turn, isn't it?
Yeah, I got you out in a most violent year. You got 5 goes to get me out, and if you don't get me out,
yeah,
we will do my reserve flick offering, uh-huh, which is Sneakers.
Oh God!
Starring Robert Redford.
I thought you changed that. You changed it to something else.
Did I?
Yeah, you did.
What did I change it to?
I don't recall, but you definitely
I changed
did.
It last week, and now it's back.
You're changing it back to Sneakers again.
Okay, no, I'm going to change it
to
Blade 2.
It's just the worst title, isn't it? The worst title.
No, but do you know what? You'd actually really like it.
I've never seen Blade 1, so can we watch that first?
Okay, fine, yeah, Blade. We're doing Blade I'd fucking love to watch Blade.
All right, let me just see if I can get you on any of these movies. The Ghostbusters remake with Melissa McCarthy, Kirsten Wiig, and Kate McKinnon.
I think it's too bad to count.
Okay, yeah. It wasn't very good. I think that's true.
I do keep meaning to rewatch it just to double check, but I remember thinking this is appalling.
All right, not that one then. Not that one. That was guest number 1. Guest number 2, Everybody Wants Some, the Richard Linklater film.
I only just watched that last year.
Did you?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought it was quite good. I quite enjoyed it.
Yeah, no, me too.
Swiss Army Man. Oh, that feels a little territory. A little territory.
A little nibble, perhaps, but it feels far too... The whole conceit is too memorable for it to be a forgot you forgot.
Okay, fair enough. Bridge of Spies.
Bridge of Spies.
Yeah.
I'd love to do it. If you can't, I mean, I might take it if you fuck up your fifth.
All right. Well, it's a take it one. Okay, fine.
But I feel like there are other Spielbergs that feel riper and richer than Bridge of Spies.
Not for me. Not for me, Frank. Final guess now. Final guess. Steve Jobs.
Oh, here we go. Yeah, you can have me on Steve Jobs. Danny Boyle's Steve Jobs. So, and you don't want to watch it.
I don't want to watch it. I just thought it might get you.
Well, you can either watch Blade.
It's just three fucking days of speeches, isn't it? That's all it is. It's like three different speech days.
Yeah. And Kate Winslet going, when are you going to announce the new Apple?
Yeah. And he's like, oh, I'm going to do it my way, however I want to. All right. Well, I guess I will either do Bridge of Spies or Blade. You decide.
We have not done anything close to something like Blade before. I would love to know.
All right,
let's do
Blade. Fine, let's do Blade. I'll watch Blade.
Yes, I would love to know what you think of a film like Blade.
Okay. I think Blade's probably a forgot you forgot anyway, because, you know, no one's talking about Blade. No one ever talks about Blade except you. So I think maybe it even counts in the canon of this church here.
Brilliant. You know, and we can talk about, I guess it's been overtaken by all this Marvel nonsense. There's old Blade, which, you know, Blade is technically Marvel, but not the movie studio Marvel.
What's this it even streaming
made
on?
By Marvel.
No, it's not streaming.
I've got
on
it on DVD. Don't need to worry about it.
Great. I'll just pay for it. That's fine.